gradually evolved into legs capable of supporting the animal's weight and allowing it to walk out of the sea. Tetrapods evolved not only limbs, but also digits.
Fingers and toes?
Exactly. One false notion used in attempts to discredit the theory of evolution is that there aren't any so-called transitional fossils. In other words, there aren't examples of intermediate forms between two branches on the evolutionary tree, such as between prehistoric fish and tetrapods.
Are there any?
Lots. In fact, a particularly exciting discovery was made in 2008. Scientists used CT scans to look at the bones hidden inside the intact fossilized pectoral fins of a 385-million-year-old lobe-finned fish discovered in Latvia. Inside the fish's stumpy, limb-like fins were rudimentary digits like a tetrapod.
Cool, a fish with fingers.
Yep. This fossil is just one of many that illustrate the gradual evolution of legs that allowed early tetrapods to leave the water and colonize the land.
This moment of science comes from Indiana University with production support from the Brabson Foundation.
Today's program was prepared by Sue Ann Zollinger with help from Clara Cotton in biology. I'm Don Glass.
And I'm Yael Cassander.
It's 2:41 in sports. The 20th-ranked Illini scored a 52-41 win over Minnesota at Assembly Hall last night. Illinois had three players in double figures, low double figures, but defense was the deciding factor. The Gophers made just 8 of their 28 shots in the second half and didn't score over the game's final 6-21. The Illinois women, meanwhile, fell to the Hawkeyes in Iowa. The score there, 69-56. The Chicago Bulls continue their postseason push when they make a stop in Washington tonight. Chicago will take on a Wizards team that's fallen to 13-44 this season. The Chicago Blackhawks play host to the Pittsburgh Penguins at the United Center tonight. It's the start of a home-heavy stretch run for the Hawks. They'll play 12 of their next 15 at the United Center. Chicago's 15-5-5 on its home ice this season. Left-hander Ted Lilly has started to make his first spring training start for the Chicago Cubs this year when they face the Texas Rangers in Arizona. Lilly will be out of action for the Cubs for a while after that while he plays for Team USA in the World Baseball Classic. And Houston Astros shortstop Miguel Tejeda has changed his mind and will play for the Dominican Republic in the World Baseball Classic. Tejeda said earlier this week he decided to skip the event because the Dominican team had asked him to play first base. The Astros said Friday that he reconsidered and will most likely be used at shortstop, third base, and designated hitter. That's sports.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Architects, designers of the M2 on Neal mixed-use project in downtown Champaign, on the web at ratioarchitects.com.
Next time on The World from PRI, journalist David Gran had a mystery to solve. What became of a British explorer who vanished in the Amazon in 1925? Gran followed the jungle trail and got lost himself. His journey into the Amazon and the day's news today on The World at 3 p.m. Tough times can be a springboard for creativity. When no one's job is safe, no one's house secure, and no one knows exactly what to do about it, artists get to work. They give us new understandings of what it means to live without a safety net, and they provide an outlet for our anxieties. NPR's Lynn Neary reports.
The Depression was a time of great stress, says Temple University professor Miles Orvell, but it was also a period of great creativity.
That kind of stress often results in the need to scream in some way, and art is a way of screaming. So I think difficult times like the ones we're experiencing today can really bring out a kind of expressive culture in an interesting way, and certainly that's what happened during the 1930s, during the Great Depression.
Artists, actors, writers, and filmmakers, some funded by the government, combine curiosity with creativity to find and tell the stories of people affected by the Depression. Books like Let Us Now Praise Famous Men and Grapes of Wrath depicted life in the Depression in stark terms. And, says Orwell, directors like Frank Capra used the popular medium of film to educate the public. In 1936, Capra made Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, the story of a man who unexpectedly inherits millions and decides to give it away after he's confronted by a desperate farmer.
I just wanted to see what kind of a man you were. I just wanted to see what a man looked like that could spend thousands of dollars on a party while people around him were hungry. The Cinderella man, huh? Did you ever stop to think how many families could have been fed on the money you pay out to get on the front pages?
Films like these, says Orville, help the middle class understand what was happening to those who had lost everything in the Depression. These days, even as we're just beginning to adjust to a new reality, there are already some films that provide insight into how this economic freefall is changing lives, says New York Times film critic A.O. Scott.
I think that very good filmmakers like, you know, novelists or other artists have an ability to see a little bit ahead or to notice things that are happening in the world before they kind of come to the surface.
The themes of poverty, unemployment, and economic distress play a strong role in movies like Frozen River, says Scott. And he says you can't help but think about the collapse of the U.S. auto industry as you watch Clint Eastwood's Gran Torino. But the film that gets closest to the raw fear of what can happen when a person's life begins to unravel economically is Wendy and Lucy, the story of a young woman who has set out for Alaska to find work and gets stuck along the way with no money, no car, no home, and no job.
Not a lot of jobs around here, huh?
I'll say. Used to be a mill, but it's been closed a long time now.
Can't get a job without an address anyway.
You can't get an address without an address. You can't get a job without a job.
This film, says Scott, doesn't set out to make a grand statement about the state of the economy.
It sort of just traces this one young woman's experience. And I think, in a way, just by doing that, by following that story, intuited some of the other stuff that was going on. That, in fact, even though we were in an orgy of consumer spending and seemed to be just awash in money, for a lot of people, that hasn't been so, and it may be that those people were kind of the canaries in the coal mine. Mama been laid on, Papa been laid on, my
brother's been laid on for more than 2 years now. Being laid off seems to be an almost universal fear these days, and perhaps no one has tapped into the psychology of layoffs better than author Joshua Ferris in his novel Then We Came to the End. It's a funny and often poignant look at what happens to a group of workers in an advertising agency who live in constant fear of losing their jobs. Written after the dot-com bust, it could as easily be said in an office today. But Ferris says he really had no idea what was coming.
It's materialized in a way that is far more pervasive and far more frightening than anything that I experienced personally working in the professional world, and anything that I really could have imagined as I was writing Then We Came to the End.
Fear, anger, sorrow, a whole welter of emotions take hold of these workers as they watch their colleagues leave the workplace for the last time.
On the drive home, we puzzled over who was next. Scott McMichaels was next. His wife had just had a baby. Sharon Turner was next. She and her husband had just purchased a house. Names? Just names to anyone else, but to us, they were the individuals who generated our greatest sympathy, the ones who put their things in a box, shook a few hands, and left without complaint.
As fearful as these characters are of losing the economic security their jobs ensure, Ferris says there is something else that is lost when their jobs are gone.
The characters lose something that they never knew they had, which was a community. They took it for granted. And when layoffs came and the agency collapsed, they lost that community. And I think that's the most human aspect of what's lost.
Of course, says A.O. Scott, books and films that dwell on the downside of the economy may not be exactly what the public wants right now. These days, Scott says, we want our realism leavened by a touch of magic, which he says explains the seemingly unstoppable popularity of Slumdog Millionaire.
It says, you know, the world is terrible. There's poverty and want and cruelty, but it can also be okay. Some kind of happy ending is possible. I don't think any of us can deny that it works, that when you're sitting there in the theater, you feel the relief that this movie offers.
And remember, Scott says, back in the dark days of the Depression, people flocked to the movies to watch Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers dance the night away. Lynn Neary, NPR News, Washington.
Someday, when I'm awfully low.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Looking for some family entertainment this weekend? Why not head to Urbana High School for a performance of The Little Mermaid? It's a Tom Thumb Theater production of the Champaign-Urbana Junior Women's Club. This production is the club's 55th annual production of Tom Thumb Theater. Proceeds from ticket sales benefit various community agencies and projects in Champaign County. With me in the studio, Kelly Mintz. She plays the role of the Little Mermaid, the young anemone. Kelly Mintz is here with me in the studio to offer us a bit of a preview of the show. Welcome. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Does the theater production differ from the Hans Christian Andersen story in the Disney movie that many of us will be familiar with?
It is different from the Disney movie. It is based on the Hans Christian Andersen version, although probably a little more upbeat and lighthearted than some of that work. But it doesn't have quite all the same characters as the Disney version, but still stuff that children and adults alike will find entertaining, and they'll be able to follow along if they know either of the stories. This one will follow along somewhat.
Yeah. A couple of the cool characters are a witch and sharks.
Yes, we have an evil sea witch and her two sharks that are, you know, kind of her henchmen. And then we have singing crabs and other singing mermaids and King Triton and all kinds of fun characters.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about Anemone and what happens to her as the play unfolds.
Well, Anemone is just turning 15, and her greatest wish is to go to the surface of the sea, and that is a gift that her father has given her other siblings when they turn 15, and now it is finally her turn to go to the surface. And while she's there, she falls in love with Prince Theodore and wants to try to figure out how she can stay with Prince Theodore, and so she ends up kind of making a deal with the sea witch so that she's able to stay with her love. But of course, that comes with some strings attached to it, and there's all kinds of things that she has to try to stop, like him falling in love with someone else or getting married to someone else, so that she can stay with him and not turn to foam on the waves of the sea, which is what the sea witch has promised will happen to her.
A good outcome at all.
No, not at all.
What do you find most charming about this show?
Oh, it's just really fun. I think the kids will enjoy it. And there's just a lot of really happy, kind of upbeat moments, peppy moments. The songs are all really happy. It's just a lot of good, clean fun.
Yeah. Now, music is part of the charm of this production.
Definitely.
What are your favorite songs in the show?
Well, I'd have to be biased and say the ones that I sing. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, one of my favorite songs is actually the Sea Witch's song, but my song that I sing is called The Songs I Sing, and that kind of gets everybody going and introduced to all the characters and follows along with, you know, Ariel's love of music from the Disney version. Anemone mm-hmm. has that same love of music. And then I also enjoy, there's a crab song that the prince sings, and another song that kind of lures the prince back into realizing that Anemone is the one that he's really in love with.
Okay. Now, you've brought a recording with you, so why don't we sample some of the music from the show. What would you like to play?
Well, we could play one of the first songs in the show, not the very first song, but the next song is called The Songs That I Sing, and Anemone sings this at her grandmother's and father's request to kind of charm the undersea world.
All right. Here we go. The Songs I Sing from The Little Mermaid. So who's backing you up in the cast? Who will we be hearing on stage behind you as you sing The Songs I Sing?
Oh, well, all my mermaid sisters will be there, and King Triton and grandmother. They will all be there. And there's a variety of performers in this. There's professionals as well, not professional actors, but women that are professionals in the community, as well as we also have students in the cast this year. We have a juniorettes club that has begun for middle school and high school age students, and we also have a couple young kids that will be joining us on the stage that wanted to be part of the production.
Yeah, there was a nice article in the paper last night.
Yes, it was
about
very nice.
The show, and I understand from that article that there's some audience interaction built into the show. Can you offer us just a little peek at that?
Oh, sure. There's always a little bit of audience interaction for the kids. That just really gets them going. So they'll be able to cheer me on or boo the evil sea witch and try to help Prince Theodore figure out who he really loves. There'll certainly be times for them to participate with that.
Okay. Now, the Tom Thumb Theater Productions raise funds for community agencies and projects. So what are some of the agencies and projects that benefit or have benefited in the past as a result of these productions?
In the past, we've done different things. Usually there's a application process where different programs or different agencies in the community apply for kind of at the end of our club year, which is in May. And we've given money to Center for Women in Transition. We've helped them paint a room in their facility. Money has gone to Urbana High School, Developmental Services Center. We've had scholarships in the past that have helped women go back to school. So it's just been a wide range of things throughout the years.
Okay, very good. And tickets are available at the door?
Yes, tickets are available at Urbana High School. They're $6 a piece. And we will also be selling raffle prizes and concessions. We'll have popcorn and water available for $1 a piece. The raffle prizes are really nice. We have different baskets set up, and everything that we make that's a profit will be given back to the community in one way or another.
Very good. The Little Mermaid this weekend at Urbana High School in the auditorium. Performances are set for this evening,
yes,
tomorrow, and Sunday. 6 performances in all, tonight at 7, tomorrow morning at 10, then a 1 p.m. and a 4 p.m. show. And there are 2 shows on Sunday, the first at 1 p.m., the second at 4 o'clock. And Urbana High is located at 1002 South Race Street in Urbana. Tickets $6 at the door. Kelly Mintz, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Celeste.
Earth and Sky.
Friday, February 27th, 2009. This weekend presents your last chance to catch the moon and planet Venus together in your evening sky until the year 2010.
It promises to be a dazzling sight, with the Moon and Venus ranking as the first and second brightest celestial bodies of the night. Whether the waxing crescent moon comes closer to Venus this evening or tomorrow evening depends on where you are on Earth's globe. As seen from North and South America, the moon swings tantalizingly close to Venus this evening. But as seen from the eastern portion of the globe, East Asia, Australia, and New Zealand, the moon will sweep closer to Venus on Saturday evening.